A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books, and we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through, and Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Justice League Spotlight episode, and I'm going to be talking about Justice League number 7 from the creative team of writer Scott Snyder. We've got Jim Chung on pencils. We've got Mark Morales, Walden Wong, and Jim Chung on inks. Tomeu More on colors, and Tom Napolitano on letters. This is, I guess you could say, the end of the first arc, but it's not a conclusion to the story. I think that's the best way to put it. The initial fight with the Legion of Doom is over. The totality has been, I'll say, contained for the time being, but the universe is still dying. The multiverse is still in trouble. The Justice League knows that it still has a long way to go before the problems that really started with the Dark Multiverse and Bruce's investigation of what the Dark Multiverse was. That's kind of how this all kicked off, right? The return of Barbados, the rise of the Dark Multiverse. I don't think it's fair to blame Bruce or blame Batman saying he brought this all on. It was already coming, and he just sensed it. And if you haven't read DC Dark Knight's Metal, I encourage you to do so, because, as I said, it really explains how we got here, right? This Dark Multiverse and was pulling the Earth down into it, and in order for the Justice League to save us all, they had to do something that basically broke the source wall. So, you know, fix one problem, another one popped up, and then in Justice League No Justice, we started seeing the repercussions of that, and it's continued in this Justice League series. So what's great about it is it's really one giant story. It's kind of at the core of the DC universe right now. And, you know, Scott Snyder, several times when he was talking about this Justice League series, was talking about how he wanted it to be central to the DC universe. He felt that Justice League, although as a title it had been telling really great stories, it wasn't at the core, it wasn't at the heart of the events of the DC universe, and hadn't been for some while. And I tend to agree with him on that. And part of it had to do with creative teams that were having a little bit harder of a time staying on schedule due to artists and other things like that. So he wanted to bring it back to being at the core of the DC universe. I believe he's done that. And we're seeing so much of this play out in other titles, especially Flash. And obviously we have the Justice League Dark. We have Justice League Odyssey coming as well very soon. So it's great to see this kind of tighter continuity, at least in my mind, and see repercussions from events happening in other books show up in Justice League and vice versa. So let me go ahead and give a quick rundown of what happens in this issue. This book actually starts off with a flashback talking about the late Vandal Savage, how he was a champion of humankind early in his existence, one of three tribes. And as he was fighting one day, he saw the totality, you know, because again, we saw this in issue one, when it was moving and heading towards Earth, it was in all universes of the multiverse and at all times. So Savage saw it, took him centuries to discover its secrets, but when he did, he took on the name Vandal Savage, and he became an enemy of man, because he knew that should anyone unlock its secrets, that could doom us all. So it's interesting the way Snyder is kind of retconning Savage and why he chose to become evil and what his machinations were all about. There's probably a lot that could be explored there. So as the scene shifts, we see Hawkgirl and Luther fighting next to the totality. Luther's a bit frustrated that the doorknob that he's holding doesn't seem to have an effect on Hawkgirl. And he's able to knock her away and head toward the totality. That's where his focus is. But again, he's just not sure who she is. He's very annoyed by that. Like, who are you? How, you know, what do you know? All the lives you've led, you know, you must have learned something. And, you know, what is it about you that I can't affect you, basically, and that this doorknob with all this power cannot affect you? Meanwhile, outside of Earth, or outside Earth's atmosphere, John Stewart's continuing to drive the vehicle that Flash made around the Earth. We saw the Earth in the panel, the final splash page of issue 6, basically become a White Lantern. And Cyborg's having a hard time understanding it and believing it, but John's like, no, it makes sense. You know, the White Lanterns are the embodiment of human life, both good and bad. And with Martian Manhunter basically connecting all the population, it makes sense that the Earth would turn into a White Lantern, so to speak. And Martian Manhunter says, yeah, you know, I'm connecting everybody both through strength and weakness, but I don't know how much longer I can hold it. And so what they need to do is to have Flash finish connecting to the Still Force and close that door. I'm not quite clear on why the Still Force is necessary to keep the door open. Maybe I missed something, or I'm not remembering something, or I need to go back and read it again. But they are relying on Flash. He's basically the only one at this point who can close the door. He's got to basically shut down every cell of his body. He's got to become one with the Still Force in order to be far enough into the Force to use it to close the door. So he's struggling to do that while Aquaman and Wonder Woman are looking on, and John is giving him advice, telling him that he understands that the Flash wasn't built to stand still, just like John Stewart himself wasn't built for speed, but you can't let self-doubt hold you back. Slowing down is about letting go. And when you let go of things, you sometimes see things that you don't necessarily want to see about yourself and the world, but you've got to keep slowing things down and come to a complete and total. And as he's about to say stop, Sinestro smashes the front of the car and says, the word you're looking for is stop. And Sinestro's like, you know, what you've actually done is doom millions of lives by turning this planet into a White Lantern. And I guess I should have expected that from you, because apparently that's what you like to do based on the destruction of Zanshi. And basically, now that Earth is a White Lantern, it can no longer be part of Umbrax. So instead, the Umbrax army is going to be forced to destroy it. And that's got John pretty upset. He's, you know, he doesn't want to lose another planet, especially not Earth. Meanwhile, as Superman looks on, he's like, you know, a lot of those planets, and he's referring to the planets in the Umbrax universe. He says, it looks like they're powering up and getting ready to fire on Earth. And Cyborg says, stand down, Superman. That is what's happening, but there's so much energy there that there's no way even you could survive. But Superman, you know, as soon as he hears that, he's off with a big foom. And Cyborg's like, wait, what went foom? Superman? Clark? And so it begins. The Earth is radiating as much of its White Lantern power as it can, trying to keep these other planets at bay as they're attacking. It's almost like a disease attacking a healthy cell. The Earth is completely surrounded. And Sinestro tells Stewart, see, all you've done is damn your kind. And as Cyborg is following along what's happening, he's like, oh, this is not good. The energy is too strong to fight. So it's either going to take over the planet or it's going to destabilize the core and destroy it. But either way, Earth is doomed. We got to get that door closed now. And Flash is like, I'm almost there. And he's continuing to slow down his cells. And he's thinking about how his power is speed, and speed is about action. But what stasis is about stillness and perspective and being able to let go and pull back and see the whole picture. And as he starts to do that, he feels something looking back at him, something that fills him with dread. And at that same time, Manta and Cheetah fire upon the base that Flash and Aquaman and Wonder Woman are in, and Flash loses it. He was so close to being right there at the heart of the Still Force, and now he's fallen back from that place. So meanwhile, we see Cheetah, Grodd, and Black Manta getting ready to fire again, and Aquaman's like, I can't control sea life through these thick walls, and if I bust out of one of the walls, it's going to cause an implosion, and it's going to flood this place. And Wonder Woman tells him, go ahead, go through the wall. I got this. So Aquaman does just that. So as Wonder Woman plugs this hole with a giant piece of machinery, she's telling Barry, I know when someone has been shaken by seeing truth, and that's what I saw in your face, but you've got to block out your fears. You've got to try again. We don't have much time. And Barry says, okay, let me try again. So Aquaman is able to call up a couple of giant sharks that dwarf the size of the underwater vehicle that Manta is piloting, and has them in full retreat. Meanwhile, inside the totality, Luther's reaching for the totality. He's talking about hearing it call out to him. He feels a connection, and he needs to be the one to possess it, because this woman, this girl, Hawker girl, doesn't have a plan for his power. But as he reaches for it, Hawk Girl basically attacks him from behind and says, I'll wing it. Meanwhile, out in space, Superman is deflecting some of the energy that these Umbrax planets are sending toward Earth with his X-ray vision, but he's starting to weaken. His cells are not going to be able to take much more. And Superman also calls for Flash to close the door. In the Sinestro-John Stewart fight, Sinestro is clearly more powerful than John Stewart, with, you know, all the power of the ultraviolet spectrum behind him. So Stewart's also calling for Flash to close the door. Martian Manhunter is struggling to keep all mankind and humanity connected, and he's calling for Flash to close the door. And at that moment, Flash reaches the still force in full, and he puts himself in a superposition. He's achieved total stillness. And when he does that, he's able to see that whole picture that I was talking about. He's able to see the secret machinery inside the universe and the designs that are living inside the totality. And rather than being a design or a plan that he's familiar with, it looks to be a blueprint of a universe that never came to be, a universe that's much more dark and cruel, but mankind is still there. And so this scares Flash. You know, he's like, I know more about the multiverse than anyone, having traveled it using my powers. And now it seems that everything we knew about the multiverse could possibly be wrong. And so he's feeling the same thing Vandal Savage felt all those years ago. And it unleashes a desire for him to turn away and to hide, right? It's part of what scared him off when he lost the connection when he was so close before. It's that feeling of dread, like this is something horrific that I don't want to be looking at. But he knows that he's got to hold on for better or worse. There's no quit in him. He's reached the place where he needs to be, and he's not going to give up because he's scared. So it works. He's able to close the membrane. We see Earth restored. And we see the Umbrax universe pushed back to where it belongs. And Sinestro's obviously upset. And he's telling Stewart, you know, I would have made you the leader of my corps, but I should have known better that you couldn't embrace that. You've never been anything but a foot soldier. And as the ultraviolet lantern costume starts to fade off of John's body, a Green Lantern ring literally just instantly appears on his finger, and he uses it to smash Sinestro with a giant building, just like you do. And meanwhile, inside the totality, Hawkgirl's reaching out for the totality, and Luther's thinking, no, this is not how it was supposed to go down. The totality, it's calling to me. But then Hawkgirl reaches the totality, and in that moment, Luther's transported back to the Legion of Doom headquarters, where the Joker's waiting. And he's like, all right, welcome home. Let's hope the others had better luck. And Luther says, call them all back, Joker, now. Sinestro's not happy with being teleported back. He says, I was just about to crush this guy, referring to John Stewart. Meanwhile, Grodd, Cheetah, and Black Manta are happy to be teleported back, away from the giant sharks about to eat their submarine. And we see Clark has Superman has crashed back down to Earth, and Cyborg's telling him that the readings indicate the cosmic membrane has been closed, And Superman says, I'm looking at bright skies. And Cyborg also relays the information that all the bad guys are teleporting out. And Superman's response to that is, why not? After all, criminals are a superstitious and cowardly lot. And the rest of the league is just loves it. Except for Batman, who says, I don't sound like that. And Cyborg's response is, see, I told you Clark's was the best. So it's a callback to the first issue when they were joking around with each other. And Martian Manhunter is wondering what happened to Kendra and what happened to the totality. And we discover that the shell is now missing and Kendra is sitting in the bottom of a crater, the totality at her knees. And John is talking about it being the oldest energy in the universe. And they're going to continue to try to fix the multiverse and the fact that it's broken. But should they fail with the totality, it might be their best chance of saving the universe. But still, the power that it contains, the truths, you know, do they dare possess it? And they don't really have a choice, so they bring it to the Hall of Justice, and it's there, and it's waiting in case they need it, almost as a, you know, break glass in case of emergency. Again, they don't fully understand it. They don't necessarily trust it because of the dread in the plans that apparently the totality contains. So they do know that they're up against a legion of evil, a team that basically believes that the shape of the multiverse and its destiny is evil. And despite whatever answers they find, even if those answers change everything they know, it will not change who they are, which is heroes. So as we see them split up and talk about what happened, John Stewart is talking to Kendra and the fact that she's already healed from her fight with the Joker and Luther. And clearly there's something going on with her that she doesn't even understand. And then Flash comes in and Stewart asks him about what he saw in the middle of the still forest. And Flash talks about how he wishes he could find the right words to tell everybody. But he does talk about how everything's connected, from the White Martians to the Seven Powers, even Kendra and all the lives she's led. It's all connected. It's one big design, but that design feels like it's made from anger. And so John Jones, Martian Manhunter's thinking about how they need answers, and he believes that the Martian Keeper of Memory has some of those answers and has been hiding them from John. And we did learn it earlier in the series that the Martian Keeper of Memory is on Thanagar Prime. So that's where John plans on going, and he's asking John Stewart and Kendra to join him. Stewart voices some concerns. He's like, you know, this ring just showed up in me. I don't even know what it is or how it works. And until I do, I don't want to let you down again. John's like, you know what? You're not going to let me down. I should have come to recruit you in person. I should have told you that I forgave you a long time ago. I just hadn't forgiven myself for what happened on Zanshi all those years ago. And John says, you know, I feel the same way, and they embrace. And so it seems like they have their mission. And Superman wants to tell them before they leave, tell John specifically that make sure John Jones understands, hey, if you called the boardroom again, even with everything we know about the totality and the Legion of Doom and Umbrax and everything that's happened so far, we still would make the same choice. You know, we wouldn't stop the totality or try to stop the totality from coming here, because it may be what we need in the end to fix everything. So we believe in you. And more than that, we chose you as our leader, because not only do you help us to communicate and keep us connected, you're also a man of empathy. And empathy isn't about just sharing your ideals, your kind of heroic beliefs. It's also about sharing your weaknesses and your fears as well. It's being open. It's communicating and allowing all the league members to communicate with each other, regardless of whether that's a negative emotion or a positive emotion. It's keeping them close. It's keeping them connected. It's like a family, right? When you're close with somebody, if they're having a tough time, you empathize with that. It affects you, and it's the same here, and that's why they chose John. And Martian Manhunter's response is, well, my actual fear is that we open the totality and we find out that the design of everything is cruel. The universe, life, it's meant to be something dark. It's meant to be something where it's complete survival of the fittest, right? Predatory, and a place where the weak can't survive. And if they find out that that's what the design is and how the universe was always supposed to be, then technically, by them being heroes and preventing these type of situations and trying to keep equality rather than some kind of survival of the fittest scenario, that the heroes of the Justice League themselves are the ones that are holding things back. And John says, you know, we're in that situation, we would be the villains. I don't know if I would go so far as to say they'd be the villains. They might be the antagonists. They're not going along with the plan. Morally, I don't know that that makes them villains, but it's an interesting concept to think about. But John goes on to say, you know, what does a Justice League do if it finds out it's on the wrong side of everything? So again, it's an interesting concept, but you're on the wrong side of everything in terms of what? In terms of, hey, we want this universe that's made differently. I don't want to live in that universe, so I wouldn't say it's the wrong side. They might be on a different side from, I don't know, destiny or fate or inevitability, but I still think that's a fight worth fighting. So John asked the question, you know, what do we do? The Justice League finds out it's on the wrong side of everything. And Superman's response is, it's simple. And before he can finish his sentence, Batman says, we justice harder. So I thought that was a great line. That's a very much a Scott Snyder line. When your back's up against the wall and you're the Justice League, what do? You justice harder. So meanwhile, we see Aquaman and Wonder Woman talking about how it didn't really seem like Cheetah and Black Manta and Gorilla Grodd were attacking that base for them. So they have a feeling that whatever they were looking for, whatever reason they were there, they're going to find out sooner than later. And the next targets may be them. They haven't really been targeted yet, like Stewart was and Flash was. So they're talking about needing to warn their respective peoples, the Amazons on Themyscira, and the Atlanteans that Mira is now queen of. And Aquaman makes a comment about the fact that they both seem to be without homes right now, because Wonder Woman talks about being able to send a message to Themyscira, but she doesn't really have a place there anymore. For, you know, Aquaman has given up the crown. Mira is ruling Atlantis. And in response to this comment about the two of them not having a home anymore, Wonder Woman says, well, you know, we have a home here, the best kind. And before she can finish the sentence, there's a giant boom. And obviously someone has boom tubed in, but Wonder Woman's comment is that boom tubes aren't even supposed to work within the Hall of Justice. So they run to join the others. And we see that the person that's boom tubed in is Starman. And it's the Will Patton Starman. And Superman's surprised to see him, says, who? Which is strange, because I believe they've met. And Starman's response is, I'm Starman, I come from the past, I have all the answers you seek, but to learn them, three of you must die. So that's a bit of a downer. And you almost expect the book to end right there on that cliffhanger. But we get one more look at Luther, who is in the Legion of Doom headquarters, thinking about Vandal Savage, thinking about the choices he made, and basically feeling disgust for Vandal choosing the path that he did and not trying to grab more power. And Luther's trying to figure out why he failed, and he can only speculate. You know, failure is something he always analyzes and tries to understand. And he does something that's, or realizes something that's kind of antithetical to who Luther is. It's not something you normally hear Luther say or even think, but he feels like not only did he underestimate the league, but he feels that the totality wanted more than just him. It wasn't about allowing Luther to achieve his potential. It wanted more than that. It needed more. And so Luther goes to the basement of the Legion of Doom. We know he's been hiding, I think he called it a weapon down there. And so he goes down and he says, "You were right. I need your help." And we see from off screen laughter begin. And as we turn to the last page, we see it's the Nightmare Batman, the Batman who laughs, saying, "I thought you'd never ask." And that's where it ends, on that cliffhanger with the Batman who laughs last, from the Dark Multiverse itself, apparently joining the Legion of Doom. So I will say that as a concept, as a character, I find the Batman who laughs to be interesting, especially his origin. But I have never cared for his design. I find it kind of ridiculous and annoying. And I mean, anybody who's listened to this podcast knows I'm not a fan of the Joker. I'm so jokered out at these days, just completely jokered out. While I appreciate the character, I do wish he looked a lot different visually. He wouldn't bug me as much. I don't know. I just don't care for the design. And mostly it's that thing that goes over his eyes. Because how would you see? It just doesn't make any sense to me. And I know I'm in the minority. I know there's a lot of people out there who love the way the Batman who laughs looks. But yeah, I could have done without this. Plus, he's always laughing, and yeah, he's just not a character that I really enjoy. Totally my thing, my personal taste. It's not a reflection on Scott Snyder or any of the storytellers, but it will be interesting to see, considering where he's from, considering his origin, what he brings to the team. And he's very much an alpha figure, right? Like, he's the smartest guy in the room. He's Bruce Wayne with all the planning and meticulousness and everything that goes into that, combined with the ruthlessness and homicidal tendencies of the Joker. I mean, he's formidable. There's no doubt. So I don't see how he and Luther work together, because they both want to be top dog in my mind. But, you know, I'm sure Snyder will make it work. And I do believe issue 8 is another Doom, Legion of Doom focused issue, but I'm not 100% on that. I'm pretty sure that it is. So I'm expecting to see that next issue. And the other thing is, as I said when I was going through the story, the Starman showing up, this version, this Will Patton version of Starman. He was never really the kind of character you would think of as time traveling from the past to give information to our hero. You know, he was very much a, you know, not really a thinking man's hero. You know what I mean? You expect people like Dr. Fate, or, you know, people that are really cerebral and connected to bigger, like the bigger events of the universe. Those are the kind of people that you expect. Phantom Stranger, for example, that's another great example of somebody that would show up. Even John Constantine, to a lesser extent. But Starman was always, you know, not that he wasn't intelligent, but he wasn't plugged into the universe in that way. So it's an interesting choice for Snyder to make, and I'm very curious to see where it goes. And plus, he looks a little different than the last time we saw him. He's holding a staff. I never really thought of him as much of a legacy character. I mean, I know Starman is a legacy character, but this version of Starman didn't seem to be connected. And I haven't read all of the James Robinson Starman series. So I know maybe he got brought in and I'm not aware of it. I think I remember hearing that. So I'm sure one of your listeners can clue me in on that, but. I guess we'll see. It's extremely interesting, as I said, because it's not a character I expected to see, and I wonder how long he'll hang around. Plus, I can't wait to see John Jones, John Stewart, and Kendra, Hawkgirl, Hawkwoman go to Thanagar Prime and see and get that story going. I'm very curious about that. Very curious about the ring that appeared on Jon Stewart's hand. So Snyder's really, you know, as much as I said, this is kind of the conclusion of the first arc, it's not the end of the story. If anything, Snyder's introduced even more subplots and little threads that he needs to flesh out further and help us understand. So it's a great issue. The Jim Chung art is spectacular. It's not really the style of Jim Chung art. I seem to remember his art being a little more, I don't want to say dynamic, but his style seems a little different to me than the last time that I saw it. And that's not to say that it's worse or better. It's just a little different. It seems a little softer to me. And maybe that's his inkers, his collaborators on the art side of things. I'm not really sure. We've had a lot more Jorge Jimenez issues than we've had Jim Chung issues, but I do feel like their art is similar enough that reading it in trade, I don't think it would be jarring or pull you out of the story. But the storytelling from panel to panel, Jim Chung's a master. He's great. He's great at conveying emotion. He's great at doing group shots. He's really great at big, bombastic splash pages. And this issue is gorgeous to look at. Just amazing. There's some montage pieces that are great. Yeah, the art here is top-notch. There's no question about that. And I also specifically want to call out Tomeu Morey on the colors. Very primary palette, but very bright and vibrant colors, especially in the cosmic shots, the scene where Starman appears, a lot of bright colors there. So yeah, the color work is spectacular. Art-wise, I couldn't ask for anything more. It's a gorgeous book to look at. It really helps to up the story, which is what you want art to do, right? You want it to really highlight the story and hit the same beats that the story does so that it raises the level of the story itself. It raises the writing and the dialogue and the scripting. And in turn, you want the scripting and the writing and the plot and the dialogue to highlight the art and know when to turn it down, right? Know when you don't need a lot of words and a lot of dialogue, because you can let the art tell the story in those moments. And the creative team here is really hitting on all cylinders. So kudos to everybody involved. I don't know right now if I'm going to do more Justice League spotlights. You know, we said we'd do the first arc. I would like to finish off the first arc of Justice League Dark. And I do want to talk about Justice League Odyssey when that comes out, because I'm really excited for that title as well. So at this point, it's kind of a wait and see, but I'll certainly let you know, or you'll find out when you tune in on a Friday and find out that the Friday episode for that week is a Justice League spotlight. So if you want me to continue doing these Justice League spotlights, certainly hit me up and let me know. And if you'd rather have me do something else, I know I've talked about getting the X-Men chronology off the ground and doing that on Fridays, and that may be something that happens in the future as well. So, but as always, you can let me know what you guys would like to have me cover. All right. Well, thanks for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other coverage of pop culture goodness, upcoming movies, TV shows, all that kind of great stuff. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I'll be at for sure is Comic-Con LA, Halloween weekend in Los Angeles, California. still trying to get out to New York Comic Con. It's up in the air at this point, but I'll be sure and let everybody know. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.